intersections are those times when we have multiple choices for the direction that we will take, and then we have to decide. This podcast will explore the many intersections in people's lives. Some are pleasant, others are hair-raising, all are important. I'm Brett Dickerson, your host. You grew up in?
Texas.
Where in Texas?
All over Texas.
Really?
I am actually the daughter of what I like to call an activist and a civic servant and a no-nonsense, brutally honest, strong African-American female. So wow. I carry a little bit of them with me everywhere I go.
Yeah, you don't seem brutal to me, though.
Oh, I can be.
Well, I get, yeah.
Don't so mistake this the is, kindness for weakness
the,
or...
This is the professional you that I see.
Yes. That's my husband. Kinda,
maybe that's who we need to have
exactly.
in here.
Exactly.
Get your husband in here next. So you grew up all over.
Mm-hmm. My dad was a regional manager for Texas Utilities.
Oh.
And so we grew up in the suburbs of Dallas. So wow. Irving, Plano, McKinney, yeah. Allen, just moved yeah. all around. So when you're in school, you think maybe this is really difficult, but it's been such a asset for me. I feel like I can meet anyone and merge into mm-hmm. any type of community because I had to do it growing up. So I don't see it as a disadvantage.
IBM kids strike me that way. People, mm-hmm. people that grew up in IBM families and mm-hmm. people that grew up in the military strike me that way. Some preacher's kids, mm-hmm. of course, you know, sometimes being a preacher's kid is an awesome, kind of a burden. So some preacher's kids don't turn out well, you know, but people have to move around a lot. Those kids just grow up learning how to really connect with people in a hurry.
Yeah, right? Connect with people and then not be afraid to try new things.
Right.
I can't even imagine living in the same place for my entire life or having the same house and the same friends. Everybody that I've met along the way has helped me be who I am today, and mm-hmm. I take a little bit of them with me everywhere I go. So it's,
but now,
it's
how
an
long,
advantage.
How long have you lived in Oklahoma City now, though?
In Oklahoma City, I graduated from Langston University in 2001,
yeah.
so it took me 4 years. That's all my dad said he would pay for or help support. You got 4 years to go to college.
So you heard the clock ticking.
Yes, tick, tick, tick. So I moved here in 1997 and went to college. Moved back to Texas for about 3 years,
yeah.
but always liked Oklahoma when mm-hmm. I was here, felt a connection to the people here. Mm-hmm. And when I saw an opportunity to come back to Oklahoma, I saw a job posting online and said, I think that's my job,
mm-hmm.
and I should try to go get it. And called a news director up and said, I'll be in town for visiting some friends and families. I had not planned on being in town. I had planned on coming and just easing my way in there to get an interview. She lives in Kansas City now, so she's probably not going to listen to this.
Listeners, this is, you're hearing some good strategy here for
exactly.
how to get a job. Yeah,
the aggressiveness that
yeah,
I
yeah,
have.
Yeah.
Came in for an interview at Channel 5, and... they called me a couple days later and said, would you like to come and
cool.
work for Channel 5? And I've been here since, I think that was 2004. So
yeah.
been here since 2004.
And you started off as the weekend anchor for Channel 5.
I actually started off as the morning news reporter.
So you just started out mm-hmm. as a reporter.
And moved up. We had some shuffling at the anchor desk, and they gave me mm-hmm. a shot. And mm-hmm. I prayed about it and sat at the desk and stayed there for about four and a half, 5 years.
Scariest situation you were ever in?
Scariest situation I was ever in. Scary, but also I would say kind of idiotic thinking back when it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're on the scene of a recent shooting in the dark and you're thinking back, this is probably not very smart.
Yeah.
To be standing.
That guy might come back.
He could come back. They may be upset with me. But the other thing was what I found is in the news business, they would send me and another African-American photographer mm-hmm. to the African-American neighborhood as if
right.
they're not going to shoot me. They very well could. That's not going to stop them.
People shoot each other
exactly.
all the time.
Like, oh, you're going to be fine.
White people shoot each other. Black people shoot it. Yeah, right.
Yeah, you're okay. going to be fine. So that was a couple of
like,
scary
like
moments.
Like somehow that's a King's X. It's
exactly.
Like,
oh, don't shoot her.
Yeah, I got a force field around me here.
Exactly. So a couple of those instances were scary and not very smart. So, and it happens.
Yes, I'm sure it does. Yeah. Yeah, so moving from the field, okay, mm-hmm. First of all, tell me, okay, so you go to Langston,
mm-hmm.
Then your first job out of Langston was?
In Victoria, Texas. I was there about 9 months.
That's where you had to carry your own camera, yes. Do your own everything, mm-hmm. Edit front to back, wall to wall.
Everything.
That really taught you the business, though, didn't it?
It taught you to be quick, respectful of people's time,
yeah,
and respectful of other people's positions when you moved up. You understood the stress that an editor undergoes, right. What an assignment editor goes through.
Wow.
And so you're respectful of their time and you get the pressure that they're under as well.
So no matter what your education, it really helps to start at the bottom of a profession. Doesn't
you
it?
Should never feel as though you need to go straight to the top. You're so much better if you go through all those experiences and you're a much better person and respectful and humbled by it.
Yeah. So from Victoria, Texas, then you came to KOCO.
I went to the booming metropolis of Waco, Texas.
Oh, Waco.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Which is interesting because my dad actually lived in Waco. It was his last job before he retired. And I have family from Bell County in that area. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be a really interesting position because we were there when President Bush was president.
Yeah.
He had his Western White House 30 minutes away. So I was always in Crawford. And then Fort Hood is about 45 minutes from there, so did a lot of military stories.
Oh, yeah.
So a really meaty city and news town,
yeah.
And not to mention it's Texas, so they have a little bit of weather. So
yeah.
It was a fun experience, and I was there for about 2 years anchoring the weekend show.
Were you there during the Branch Davidian?
No, not there during the Branch Davidian, but met a lot of people who were there and the stories that they told that changed their lives.
Yeah.
So
you came there after that assault?
Mm-hmm.
After, I'm just trying to put you on the timeline there.
Yes, so, after that assault.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
But a very fun job.
Yeah. Sounds like more news than you knew what to do with.
Exactly.
Probably in Victoria, you were trying to figure out some days.
Yeah, it was, oh,
where
we're
the
getting
news is.
New
yeah.
addresses painted on the side of the curbs of the neighborhoods. Go out there and do that story. Taxpayer dollars at work. Okay.
Then you get to Waco, and it's like, how do I triage all of this stuff that's coming in? All
yes.
of these press reports and from Fort Hood.
But not only that, but dealing with the military, because so much of what happens is secret. They can't tell you or they won't tell you.
Right.
And then you have people calling you, telling you these horrible, awful things that are happening.
Right.
And then you try to get information.
But you can't confirm
it. You can't confirm anything.
Yeah,
so it was frustrating as well.
You
meet
so then,
great people, but it was very frustrating because you're like, is this really happening? I've had 6 calls about this. You get nowhere with it.
Yeah, so you can't confirm anything, so you can't put it on the air
without
putting the station at risk. Then,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you go from Waco, then do you come here?
Yeah, then
to
I came
KMC?
Here. Then
okay.
I came to Channel 5.
All right.
Was there about 4.5 years.
Yeah.
Loved every minute of it.
So you went from field reporter to weekend anchor
mm-hmm.
to evening anchor, right?
Well, I went from morning reporter here in Oklahoma City to morning anchor in Oklahoma City. And then I was the primary fill-in anchor for the evening news.
Okay, so shifting gears now.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're on the other side of the news. And that's how I first met you. I was writing for Red Dirt Report, and now I write for The Gazette, and I'm writing for a magazine now, some too. But I was kind of on the beat. Oklahoma City Public Schools was a part of my beat for Red Dirt Report. And so that's how I met you. So which is really cool because I see you on TV a lot.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, okay, I know who that is. So I was one of those guys that go, oh, yeah, I know who that is, yeah. So now you're on the other, kind of the other, another part of, you can't say ends. I mean, my God, there are like so many points of of contact in the news. But now you're at a different place now. You're really kind of the shepherd, the provider for the news instead of gathering the news. Yeah, yeah. So how, two biggest differences for you now, being on that part of the news?
At the time when I was in news, you feel like you have some compassion,
mm-hmm.
but you're still numb to a lot of things.
Yeah.
And then when you come on this side of it, it's like you have feelings and compassion. It's like you're no longer numb.
Is that because you get to know people better?
You get to know people better,
yeah.
and you get to, everything doesn't end at 6:30.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in news, it's like you just got to get to 6:30 and then you're done, or 10:30 if you work the night shift. And then the next day, it's on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
First couple of weeks with Oklahoma City Public Schools, I remember superintendent would come in and tell me a crisis or an issue, and I would say, are they dead? Is there blood? Okay. Because that's the questions that you would ask in the newsroom, like what's really happening. And so that's the part I probably enjoy the most now, is having the feeling and the compassion even more so.
Yeah.
And seeing what you do every day is going to have a lasting effect.
Yeah.
And that it doesn't end when the news goes off.
Yeah.
The next day, it's
more,
just spreads
over. It sounds like it's much more satisfying to you because you really have had an opportunity to really get to know the people that you work with every day.
You get to know the people that you work with every day, the parents, the teachers, the principals, the reporters in a lot of ways. They change often. But if they're going to come in and do a story about Oklahoma City Public Schools, I'm going to try to give them as much information as I can and learn their personality to see, okay, this is the type of stories that they're interested in or their general approach to things, which makes it a lot easier. But it's in news, it's every day is something different, of course, but it ends.
Yeah.
When the TV shows go off, that's it. It's on to something else.
There's a beginning and an end.
There's a beginning and an end. I mean, but in public relations and working with the schools, public ed is an ongoing conversation that has not been fixed yet.
And there are lots of conversations within that larger conversation.
Exactly. And
every time I get a press release from you guys about some incident that has occurred, I go, whoa, this is... but also I think about you and Mark both, Mark Myers, who has come in, that both of you from your TV days experience, you know, your TV news days, that you, the one advantage you bring to that is that you're used to doing things on the fly.
Yes.
Right? And there's plenty of things that happen in the school business on the fly. Right?
Absolutely. And for a lot of people, we're the calm in the crisis because we're like, oh, we can handle this.
Yeah,
you know, you really only need 15 minutes to come up with a plan and we're ready to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And so a lot of people come to us as a soft place to land because it really does take a lot for us to get worked up about things because we've seen so much. And so we'll... Like, why did they come in and tell us? They just need a soft place to land. It's totally fine. So, but yeah, always on the fly. I mean, you have a framework and some structure, but you can't be confined to just that. You have to be in tune to what...
The example that I'm thinking about is the morning that somebody thought they saw somebody driving through the parking lot with guns down at U.S. Grant. So now they have this situation where they got all the students in and they've locked the doors to make sure somebody else doesn't come in, and now the police are there and whatever. You know, because you've been in news, that the news is going to smell that. That's blood in the
helicopters,
water.
Helicopters all over the place.
That's blood in the water. You know, anything, because kids are going to be on their cell phones telling their parents. Mm-hmm. Parents are going to call the news. Somebody's going to call the news. So there you go, blood in the water. So... when I saw you guys send that press release out, it's, you know, it's like 10:30 in the morning. Whenever I see you guys sending a press release out at like 10:30 in the morning, it's either we're baking cookies at this elementary school, or it's, there's something really dangerous going on. We're trying to manage this thing. So, so how did you, just that example right there, what are the challenges in the PR business when you know that helicopters and news, TV news people are going to be on that. They're on it. It's dramatic. Mm-hmm. It's school. It's kids. It's dramatic. Lots of blood in the water on that in there. Yeah.
One of the challenges that I really didn't have when I was in news was social media, because now kids can text their parents. Yeah. They can text Channel 9, 4, 5, Fox, all of them, and tell them what they're seeing.
Right.
So one of the challenges is that. The second one is keeping your composure, because what I've learned is there's always layers. It's going to start off as if the world is on fire and everyone's dying. And then you start to pull back the layers, and you're like, oh, that was actually a water gun, and no bullets were involved.
Right.
But you have to be... proactive and take it seriously.
Right.
And for me, my rule of thumb is tell the parents first.
Right.
This will probably more than likely upset the media, but I have a responsibility to them because they're calling and wanting to know what's happening. So before I send that press release to you, Brett, and the other media outlets, we're already making phone calls to parents. So if we're still working on it because we owe that responsibility to the parents, but also to communicate with the staff because kids are asking the staff what's happening. So it's three layers. It's the parents, it's the staff, and then the media. And then you tell the board members and also other staff within central office that's going to have something to do with it. So keeping the composure, but also working in that framework to make sure you take care of the family first. And for me, the family is the parents, the teachers, the kids, and then the staff at Oklahoma City Public Schools. And then you all are important. We value what you do, but you got to take care of family first.
We're consumers, yes. You know, at the end of the day.
And because, you know, being in news for Mark and I, we can whip that stuff out pretty fast.
Sure.
The other challenge is Spanish. You know, we whip it out really, really fast, then we give it to Liz, who has to do it in Spanish.
In Spanish.
To make sure that our Spanish-speaking parents know what's happening, but also Telemundo, because words like lockdown don't really translate.
Yeah.
And so it takes a little longer to translate that.
Yeah.
So those are probably the challenges that we face every single day that I think we do a really good job at. Keeping our composure, knowing that we're going to get the message out, because if you rush, you're going to make mistakes.
Something that has impressed me about the way you run PR with Oklahoma City Public Schools is that yes, you control the message, but it seems to me, check me on this if I'm wrong, it seems to me that more often than not, you encourage talking and openness and disclosure, where some people just want to slam their door and not talk to anybody.
And another approach that
that true?
And you know, there's other PR companies and representatives that will just write up talking points and say, "You say this," but I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm going to ask you questions ahead of time and see how you'd respond to that, and base my responses to make sure that your voice is in those talking points, and A, you feel confident speaking to the media, and that you're not going to say anything that will get us sued with FERPA violations or whatever.
Yeah.
But also, I believe in what I always tell the superintendent and my staff. If our baby's ugly, we're going to tell people our baby's ugly. Instead of someone saying,
they don't want to,
your baby's ugly.
They don't always want to do that.
No, this is our baby, and we're going to call it what it is.
Right.
And it's going to be tough and bumpy for maybe the next couple of days. But it would be way worse if we were completely hiding behind it. And so you get some pushback from that just out of fear.
Yeah.
It's not that you don't want to. It's just, we're going to volunteer the information.
Yeah.
It's going to get out anyways, and they need to hear it from us first. So let's be courageous and get it out there.
Having been a public school teacher myself, public schools are great big institutions. Mm-hmm. They naturally become bureaucratic because people are bureaucratic.
Mm-hmm.
Bureaucracy doesn't fall out of the sky. Aliens don't come and introduce it. That's what people do when they get in big organizations. And so what I've noticed about your influence on that organization is that when there are a lot of crises, which there are, in a school district that has, according to whatever the source is, 88% to 90% eligibility for free and reduced lunch, you're going to have a lot of crises because the people are in crisis. Their lives are, poverty creates crisis. And so when you coach people, let's just kind of broaden this out a little bit. The best PR work, does it say to everybody, can I call you back in 3 weeks? Which I've actually had PR people say that to me before. Can I call you back in 3 weeks?
Not tyranny.
Not you.
Mark,
not you. Not you. I'm contrasting your approach to another PR firm here in Oklahoma City. That's the client speaking. Probably they don't want to talk to anybody. And so they say, can I get back with you in 3 weeks? You know, well, you know, even in the print business, it's like, yeah, okay, guy, I get this. You know, I get what's going on. You're putting me off. You don't want to talk. Your client doesn't want to talk. Okay, but what I've noticed is that you really push for some sort of disclosure. Now it's controlled. If we can put the best face on this, fine. That's something anybody would be expected to do. But you keep talking to people, don't you?
Yeah. I want it to be authentic. Mm-hmm. And I want the people who work with me to be courageous. Mm-hmm. And that means calling it out, telling it like it is sometimes. And, you know, I don't want to put, because sometimes you'll have staff members like, tell me exactly what it is that I need to say.
Yeah.
Let's have a conversation first.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to remember what I want you to say. You're not going to remember that. But if we have a conversation and I can help you feel more comfortable with it, you're more engaged and I can point out and say, that was really good what you said. Did you feel comfortable saying that?
Mm-hmm.
Let's write that down, because that's kind of what you want to say.
Good.
So with that approach is normally what I take. But yeah, it's about being courageous and honest. And I don't think I could work at a place where I had to be that formulated and rigid.
Yeah, I think the general public believes that most PR work is
spinning,
skillful lying about things.
Yes.
Like, you know, what we call spin. That's a nicer word, isn't it? But like, you know, skillful lying about things. But is that really the best PR work?
No. I truly believe the best PR work starts internally, because people want to see me and Mark on television. And oftentimes you'll get people who are like, well, why can't you do it? Because they really don't care what Mark and I have to say. You're a teacher, and they would much rather hear from you, and you carry a level of respect. And so for us, having, you know, a strategic approach to, A, reminding teachers to pat yourself on the back, because they forget all of the amazing things that they're doing.
Right.
And then you'll have a conversation with one, they've done something amazing, and we're like, what? You didn't tell us? Oh, it's just another day at work. Oh, you have to tell us. You have to applaud yourself and pat yourself on the back. But also, if I can make you feel comfortable to actually be the spokesperson on behalf of your kids and your teachers in the school district, it's incredibly more effective than if Mark and I did it. And part of that is disclosing the information and making sure they feel comfortable doing it.
Well, best example about the interactive approach that you take, I thought, was the mascot change at Capitol Hill High School.
Yes.
Tell us about that process, because, and this really surprised me, I wouldn't have expected them to get the person in charge of PR to do that, but it made perfect sense when I heard it. As soon as I heard it, I went, yeah, that makes sense to do that. It becomes apparent, you know, for a lot of different reasons, we don't have to talk about all that, that the mascot needs to change at Capitol Hill High School. So what was the mascot? What did it end up being? And then tell us the process that was in there, because really it was a very involved process, and you were the shepherd of all that, weren't you?
Yes, I was blessed to be the shepherd. And actually, we've received concerns, calls for years prior to even Mr. New coming, prior to Dave Lopez coming, of people wanting us to take up this issue. And thankfully, Mr. New was courageous enough to say, I'm going to go against the grain. I know I live in Oklahoma and that this is a very sensitive topic, but I'm about equity and I'm going to do what I think is really, really fair.
So the Capitol Hill mascot was?
The Redskins.
The Redskins. This caricature of...
Yes. And you see schools across the country that are now battling with this.
Yeah.
And so we had a someone from Native American Student Services do a presentation at the board. The board members learned the history of the word and voted to remove it.
Right.
The very next day, actually that evening, I told the superintendent, I said, we're going to have some kickback.
Right.
No one has been able to have a voice, not kids, not teachers, not no one's been able to have a voice. So expect some kickback. The next day we had protests at the school because there were kids who didn't understand where the word came from and loved their mascot.
Plus the alumni association.
Plus the alumni, which is a very historic and respected alumni organization in the city.
Yeah.
So one of the first things that we did that I suggested is a conflict resolution session. We invited all the people that had ever sent me emails since we voted or called. I wrote their names down. We found a place. We found a moderator to come in and let people just vent, which is what they really wanted to do. They wanted to vent to make sure that we understood how emotional this was for them. So we allowed them to vent. And then from those people, we asked the Alumni Association, the school, and then also the board member to nominate a couple of people to serve on this committee to help us find a mascot. So we had all of the voices and the audiences covered. And then we spent about a month and a half meeting with kids and coming up with norms for what should this look like? What do we want our mascot to be? And you could sit in the room and you see the adults saying, no, this is what it should be. And this is the way that it should be. And then from the mouth of babes, they would just shut it down. This is what we want. We want to never have to go through this again. Yeah. This is the future of Capitol Hill High School. And so once the kids really got involved in it, the direction changed. And we were able to come up with, I think, some very good finalists for the mascot. And then the students did a vote and named the Red Wolves as the mascot at the end of the year last year. And I was at Capitol Hill actually earlier this week, and the kids have embraced it. They have a Wolfpack 5K run that they just finished.
It's the Red Wolves.
Yes, they've made a space in their alumni room to start putting trophies that say Red Wolves on it, and taking little, they have new band uniforms and cheerleading uniforms. They now have a mascot, because that was something that the kids were very adamant about. They were the Redskins, but they didn't have someone in a costume at the basketball and football games.
Right.
So they were adamant that it be an animal so they could have someone and have tryouts and actually have a costume. So they have that now. And so we get calls all the time from school districts and across the country. Like, how did you do it? What is it that you did?
Yeah.
How was it so successful?
And it was a process. Wasn't it?
It was a process.
It was a real process with real people. And other school districts might try to just give it to this tight little group and keep all the doors closed.
Right.
But by the time you got, I covered that assembly where you announced it and stuff. And I just want to say I was extraordinarily impressed with that student body. Having been a public school teacher for 16 years before becoming a reporter, I've seen a lot of school assemblies. And most of them are big messes, you know, and that was an amazing sight to me. This, I was impressed with the student body to start with, just watching that student body in there. They wanted to be there. They're proud of that. They were proud of where they were coming out on that. And that was probably among the top five school assemblies I've ever been to, ever. And I was a public school teacher for 16 years. So,
So I just
want to tell you that. That was an amazing outcome on that. And the alumni were there. And the alumni, you know, start off being really, really upset about that. Felt like their history was being taken away and whatever. But because they had an investment in it, now the alumni are on board with it too.
And when I met with students, student leaders at the school, and we started talking about the assembly, because it was student-led, they were the ones that said, do you think we can call the alumni to get pictures, and maybe they could sing the fight song? And so they wanted the history of Capitol Hill to be included.
Yeah.
And then I remember at the assembly, after we made the announcement, you could hear howls. Some of the kids started howling immediately. And I was like, we did it. I think it's going to be okay. So it's definitely something that me and my team are extremely proud of. And you walk in there, and the kids are acclimated, and they're Red Wolves now.
How about that?
So howl away.
Tierney Tenen, thank you so much for being with us today. And this has really been a great session. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's been really refreshing to speak on my own behalf, because so much of what I do during the day is on behalf of someone else. So it's good just to talk for me and for my heart. So I appreciate the opportunity.
That concludes the interview. Thank you for listening. This podcast idea came from taking a hard look at the many intersections in my life and listening to the intersections that other people talk about in their own lives. I want to hear about your intersections. My email address is ideas@intersectionsok.com. You can also communicate with me on Twitter and Instagram at intersectionsok. Also, take a look at the website at intersectionsok.com. Steven Tyler is the producer, and I am your host, Brett Dickerson.